Robert, let's get back into the Black Genesis before we take phone calls. So they meet this young woman. She says, come on and meet the king. And off they go, and they see these artifacts, these the things that they've done with monuments. Pick it up from there.
Yes. Well, here we are now in 1926, and I was saying earlier that a prince of Egypt, Prince Kamar ed-Din, inspired by the exploration of his predecessor, Hassanein, who discovered Jebel Wainat, contacted the Ford Company, who built for him three, if I recall well, three motorized vehicles, the very, very first vehicles, which we, I suppose, could call four-wheel vehicles. He started his exploration, not as Hassanein did, along the Libyan border, but he went across Egypt and headed straight for the southwest corner. And on the way, about 200 kilometers before the Jebel Wainat, that mysterious place where there was the king and that woman, he came across a mountain range that he named Gilf Kebir. Now, this is extraordinary. I mean, we're 1926, and what he discovered was a mountain range the size of Switzerland. If you can visualize Switzerland without any trees, that's how the Gilf Kebir looks like. I mean, I've seen it lately with Tom Brophy. And totally unexplored. I mean, no modern man had been there. A few years later, it was explored by the famous Count El-Mashi. For those who have seen the film, The English Patient. Have you seen it, George?
Oh, yes. Yep.
Well, you remember when she dies in the cave, Lady, what was her name? In that famous cave of swimmers. Well, that's where they didn't actually film there. They reconstructed the cave. In fact, they didn't film there because it's so remote. They couldn't get there. Count El-Mashi, who actually existed, went there with a small gypsy moth plane that he had got. She was called Lady Clayton, by the way. That's right, Lady Clayton. And she didn't really die there, by the way. The Hollywood made her die in the cave. But in fact, she died getting out of the plane in England. She stumbled and broke her neck. Not very romantic. But
no.
But anyway, this region, like I said, is the size of Switzerland, even today hardly explored. When Count El-Mashi went there, he found the famous Cave of Swimmers, and there was the first literally drawings. What had been seen at Jebel Wainat were actually carvings. They had carved on the rock the picture of animals. And what was at Gilf Kebir in this Cave of Swimmers were actually drawings made by artists, prehistoric artists, and they drew themselves. And here was the first literally pictures of prehistoric people, black people, with clearly a very sophisticated kind of society. They had domesticated cattle. One can see them with cattle, and they seem to have had houses. And they seem to have had a lot of fun. They're always shown dancing and performing all sorts of wonderful rituals and swimming. This Cave of Swimmers shows them diving in what is obviously pools of water and lakes, which, of course, do not exist there now. Now, the whole region, of course, it excited a lot of interest with anthropologists, but was forgotten. Okay, fair enough. There were people living there, prehistoric people. It was nothing very new, really, because we knew that there were other prehistoric people living in other places of the Sahara. What is new, and this is where Tom Brophy comes in, is that somewhere along the sixth or seventh millennium, these people must have moved further east towards the Nile Valley. And they settled in a place called Napta Playa. And now we come to this mysterious Napta Playa. Yeah. Now, Napta Playa was discovered only in 1974. We tell the whole story, by the way, in Black Genesis. It's quite an incredible story. A team of American anthropologists led by Fred Wendorf from the South Methodist University of Texas was driving driving along in that desert region, about 100 kilometers west of Abu Simbel. Abu Simbel is the most southern point on the Nile, where there is the famous temple of Ramses II, these colossi that people see in movies. And they were about 100 kilometers from the Nile, and they stopped, of all things, to have what they call a comfort break. They were having a pee. And while they were standing there having their comfort break, they noticed stones that were sticking out of the ground. And as they looked closer, there was all sorts of pot shards and strange carved stones. And so they realized that they had stumbled on a prehistoric site. They named it Nabta Playa. Nabta is the word that anthropologists used for a dried lake or dried riverbed. Playa. And Nabta is the name coming from the Arabs. It means little grains of corn or whatever. What is strange is that they started exploring this region. They started setting up a team. They called themselves the Combined Prehistoric Expedition. It was formed between the American team and a Polish Academy of Science, the Polish Academy of Science, headed by Fred Wendorf. And for a long time, they considered the site purely from an anthropological point of view. It was very mysterious. They very quickly identified it not as a settlement, but rather as a ceremonial complex. What they found, which was very bizarre and still mystifies us today, was a variety of megalithic constructions. Let me explain a bit here. Can I go on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interrupt me when you want to.
We'll get to the calls, but I want this is fascinating. I want to hear this.
Yes. Okay, let me explain how this place looks like. I've been there many times, and Tom as well has been several times. We've been together as well. The first thing that they were taken was that they found a sort of mini Stonehenge, what they call today a calendar circle, made of not very large stones. But what was intriguing, and I'll come to that in a minute, is that they're set in a way that very clearly shows astronomical alignments. But they didn't realize this at the time. They weren't really looking for astronomical alignments. They also found what they called structural complexes. There's all sorts of cluster of stones that look like little mini prehistoric temples, very, very small clusters. And it looks like things were buried underneath these clusters. When they started excavating some of these, they opened five. There's quite a lot of them. They were expecting to find human bodies. What they were surprised to find, in some of them, they found buried cattle.
Clearly, cattle? Huh.
Yep. Very clearly ceremonial burials. The cattle were placed in such a manner that looked like they were placed in complete some artifacts around them. They were all
like,
facing.
Like they worshipped them?
Almost certainly, and this is very important because we now realize that what we thought was original to pharaonic Egypt, the cattle cults, like the cult of Isis, the cult of the sky goddess, probably came from there. But let me carry on. In some of these excavations, they were surprised to find not cattle or human bodies, but huge boulders literally buried, in underneath these clusters at about 3 meters deep. And underneath these boulders, some 8 or 9 meters deep, they found the natural bedrock, outcrops of natural bedrock, which had been carved by human hands. Now, this is very weird, apart from the fact that we have no idea why they wanted to bury these boulders, which were clearly also fashioned. One of them actually looks like a very roughly like a cow. It's absolutely mysterious. To add to this mystery, they began to suspect that some of the stones that were protruding out of the ground had been actually placed in alignments. And Fred Wendorf had a hunch. They thought maybe something to do with the aligning monuments, like they knew had been done in ancient Egypt. And they invited an astronomer, Kim Melville from Boulder, Colorado. And he immediately realized when he went there that he was looking at a ceremonial site that had astronomical alignments.